Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today, as we approach the end of 2017, we'll look back on the first year of the Trump administration and search for some glimmers of hope amid the dark clouds at home from the destruction of our domestic tranquility and the diminution of America's standing abroad as Trump undermines democratic values while encouraging authoritarianism and white nationalism. We'll begin with Roger Morris, who served on the senior staff of the National Security Council under Presidents Johnson and Nixon until resigning with Anthony Lake over the bombing of Cambodia. He joins us to assess the extent to which Newton's law applies to our domestic and foreign policy in terms of every action having an equal and opposite reaction. We explore whether Trump's avarice, amateurism, ignorance, and cynicism will eventually catch up with him as the huckster who promises bigger and better things delivers less and less. We'll look into how already there are impressive signs of opposition forming at the grassroots, which is likely to build as more and more Americans recognize the hollow and fraudulent nature of the empty promises coming from the White House, while the criminality and kleptocracy of this regime comes under increasing scrutiny from the special counsel, who Trump might well fire as Mueller gets close to indicting him. Then we will speak with the director of a new film that takes on the issues of immigration and race relations roiling America and Europe and deals with the ugly reemergence of white nationalism. Fatih Akin, the director of In the Fade, a feature film out of Germany starring Diane Kruger, joins us to discuss this drama about a German woman seeking justice for the terrorist attack that killed her Kurdish husband and son. Based on a real incident involving young German neo-Nazis who killed Turks living in Germany, the movie reflects the political tensions resulting from immigration in Germany today that Donald Trump has inflamed here at home and which emerged in Charlottesville. And joining us now is Roger Morris, who served on the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, until resigning with Anthony Lake over the invasion of Cambodia. He's the author of Between the Graves, America, Afghanistan, and the Politics of Intervention, which is based on thousands of previously secret documents. And his latest book is A Comparative History of the Inner Politics of the U.S. and the USSR, Kindred Rivals, America, Russia, and Their Failed Ideals. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roger Morris.
Thank you, Ian.
And as we wrap up 2017 and 2018 fast approaches, 2018 being a critical year, the year in which the Democrats, if they take back the House, they may well proceed with impeachment. But one never knows with Donald Trump at what moment he's going to fire the special counsel. That's a real possibility. In fact, we're pre-taping this between the holidays, so it could have already happened. So it's very difficult to keep up with the daily antics of the White House, and it seems to be a deliberate strategy on the part of this reality TV star who's now got the ultimate reality TV role, which is the survivor in the White House, and he throws out chaos on a daily basis, I think, as a way to hide his incompetence. And it's almost as if it's government by stunt on a daily basis. Do you think we can endure another year of this, let alone another 3 years?
Well, I think we can endure it. Whether we do it in good form and good shape is the question. You know, there's a sense, Ian, in which Donald Trump is quite a positive development for reform and for change in the United States. I've never seen more active mobilization at the grassroots among what's left of the Democratic Party and most hopefully of what's new in activists and citizen participants who are in the political process for the first time simply because they're terrified, appalled, and generally shocked at this presidency. So it's taken a pathology, as it were, to stir this kind of reform impetus in the United States, and I think that will last over time, staving off some kind of calamity, some kind of disaster in foreign policy of course, is the urgent task of the moment. And as you well know, there are lots of opportunities for that in the coming year. This is not going to be a quiet time for America abroad. I think we've discovered in 2017 that the world can live without American leadership, and even in the shadow of a kind of American madness in the presidency. But whether the world can also live with some kind of mad, impulsive act, of course, is yet to be seen.
Well, the fact that President Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital to bolster the Christian Zionist vote in Alabama to help elect a child molester gives you an idea of the reckless lack of priorities here in this administration. So it's not inconceivable that if he's capable of something like that, he's capable of a wag the dog war, is he not?
Well, he certainly is, and I think that very much depends on how he sees his own fortunes, and that in turn may depend on how competent and thorough the special counsel is. I think there's no question that Donald Trump is improvising in the sense, and it's kind of a deliberate improvisation, in the sense that as a reality TV character, he's living day to day and trying to project the best image he can. He lives in his own universe, of course, and it's a universe of his own ethics and morality and his own sense of the truth. The country, it seems to me, as I said, is doing better in the sense that it seems to me more aware, more conscious of politics and of the system, of the fix and favor in Washington. You can see that every day in the demonstrations that are mounted against the Congress and against the kind of implicit and explicit compromise and surrender that's going on. We would not have seen that, I think, under a Hillary Clinton presidency. We have not seen it under Barack Obama or even George W. Bush at the height of the public opposition to the Iraq War and the appalling character of that government, of the Bush-Cheney duopoly. We didn't have this kind of public outrage, and I do think that's quite positive, but it's always possible that this man can act in an irrational and impulsive way, as you say, to wag the dog, to try to turn around what he regards as a threatening moment in his own presidency.
And again, I'm speaking with Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning with Anthony Lake over the invasion of Cambodia. He's the author of Between the Graves, America, Afghanistan, and the Politics of Intervention, which is based on thousands of previously secret documents. And his latest book is A Comparative History of the Inner Politics of the U.S. and the USSR, Kindred Rivals, America, Russia, and Their Failed Ideals. And of course, Roger, this year has been dominated by Russia and the Mueller investigation, of course, which I mentioned could be shut down at any moment. There's clearly a propaganda campaign underway led by Fox News to slime and discredit this otherwise highly praised individual, Robert Mueller, a Vietnam War hero, Republican appointee to the FBI. And an all-round, highly respected figure until Rupert Murdoch decided to unleash his junkyard dogs on Mueller. What's your sense of whether there'll be some resolution? I mean, it was extraordinary a week or so ago when the former head of American intelligence, the director of national intelligence, General James Clapper, in an interview on CNN, basically said that Vladimir Putin is Trump's case officer, and Trump is Putin's asset. An extraordinary statement coming from the top intelligence or the former top intelligence figure in the United States. So there's this disconnect. The intelligence community, which rarely agrees on anything, it's a big deal to have everybody line up and say that Russia did interfere in our elections. Trump defies that, keeps calling it a hoax. The right-wing Republicans, who normally were red baiters and Russian haters and Soviet haters, are now all covering up for Trump, which is extraordinary. And even people on the left, like the Nation magazine editors and Oliver Stone and Susan Sarandon and that crowd on the loony left, they're all making apologies. So I don't understand why people don't get it. I mean, unless they believe that they're so alienated from their government that they think that anything that the intelligence community has anything to do with is some kind of lie.
Well, I think it's been an established fact, as you and I know, in the American intelligence community, and not just the CIA, not just the Director of National Intelligence, not just the military, or NSA, or any of the feudal fiefdoms of that world, but all of them together consensually, that this was a major a Russian operation, that it involved the collusion and cooperation to some extent of the Trump campaign. And I think also there's been a conviction that they're dealing, and this is Mueller's conviction, I'm sure, they're dealing with a kleptocracy in power in America, which is in collusion with the Russians, and that Donald Trump has been compromised in fundamental ways, not just in the campaign, but previously in his own business dealings. I think that's the moment and the significance of Mueller looking at the business history of the Trump empire, as well as the immediate history of collusion and the issues of obstruction of justice and all the rest. I don't think Mueller is going to be affected to any degree at all by the propaganda campaign of Fox News or Rupert Murdoch. I don't think he's affected by the dishonor and the treachery, really, has to be called that, of the Republican Party or the Republican Congress, which has, as you said, historically reversed themselves in terms of being the champions and protectors of national security to now being the champions and protectors of their own political power. And it's done, of course, in ignorance, but mostly in fear of what the Trump base can do to them in 2018. And that's going to happen anyway. I don't think there's any question that Mueller will come down with a series of devastating findings. Whether he directly implicates the president or not, he will turn this administration into the disgrace that it certainly is. In light of history, there will be prosecutions, there will be convictions, there will be an attrition of major players, both in the campaign and in the administration itself. It's arguably not only the most inept, but the most corrupt administration in modern American history, and certainly the most pathological in terms of the animus and instability of its leader. So Mueller is dealing with an absolutely singular historical moment, and I think we could not have had a better man for that, a better personality. He's stoic and quite serious and professional. He's got the best staff of lawyers, of prosecutors, probably in the history of government prosecution. I think this is going to be a climactic moment in American life. And yes, it will be a constitutional crisis if he tries to fire Mueller. And yes, it will be an awful test of the Republican Party and of Republicans in Congress, which I think they will, for the most part, fail. But I do think that the prosecution will survive. I do think that history's verdict will be clear, and we're just going to have to live through the terrible moment here. The death throes of this old era are going to be dire. And as I said earlier, staving off catastrophe is the order of the moment. I think in the long run, there will be a major rebellion in the American electorate. You'll have a new Congress in 2018. I think you'll certainly have a new president in 2020, if not before. And I think that all of that is is very hopeful, but it's going to be a close-run thing.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Roger, since we're taping this earlier than the broadcast, one doesn't know that whether or not during the holidays Donald Trump will take advantage of the distraction and fire Mueller. So whether it's a done deal or not, it seems very much that it's going to be in the cards. But to my mind, a lot of damage has already been done, not just because of these extraordinary reactionary policies and these horrible people that Trump has put in charge of all these government departments, whose mission is to destroy the functioning of these government departments. As we all know from the recently passed tax bill, it's an obscenity. A man who ran as a populist against Wall Street and against Hillary Clinton, who he painted as a creature of Wall Street, has now shown total contempt for his voters, even though they loyally follow him and are in the Fox, Breitbart, Sinclair bubble, believing him and thinking everything else is fake news. That's where I think the damage has already been done. I don't know how a country, let alone a superpower, can survive where there's no consensus on what is real and what is true anymore. And that is an export from Putin, from Putin's Russia, from his political technologist, Surkov, the idea that nothing is true and everything is possible. And Bannon and others seized on that, not to mention the active involvement of Russian cyber activities, bots and troll farms, etc. But an example, for example, is I think one of the reasons why Bannon was running Roy Moore down there in Alabama was that had the U.S. Senate elected, or had the Republicans elected, a child molester to the U.S. Senate, that would just further spread despair, which is the whole strategy of Putin and Bannon, is to spread despair, lower the bar continually to the point where nothing is sacred, so that the criminals can take over.
Well, I all of this is true, Ian, but I would just come back in a, I hope, in a somewhat more optimistic vein for the new year. All of this is reversible. The tax bill can be reversed, and almost certainly will be. All of the savaged protections that have been demolished by this administration, from the environment to any kind of social enlightenment that we managed over the last 25 or 30 years, the last dismantling here of the New Deal and the Great Society, all of that can be reversed by a Democratic Congress and by a new Democratic Party, which I do think is emerging. There isn't anything that cannot be changed, including the Congress, the presidency, all of the legislation that's being imposed. Now, there will be damage and pain and suffering in the meantime. There's no question about that. What bothers me, of course, is the irreversible. And the irreversible, as we know, not to be too grim about it, would be a major war of any kind, a nuclear attack of any sort, any kind of constitutional usurpation that Trump may attempt. But I really don't think he's up to that. And I really don't think in the final analysis even the Republicans are up to that. This is a party that's going to be transformed and changed themselves by the defeats of 2018 and 2020. There will be an opening of a way to a more serious and responsible conservatism, rid of the rancid dogma and rank atavism that has emerged in this party, not just in the Trump era, but been cooking and simmering for a long time now. But all of that is reversible in terms of American democratic politics, if the order holds, if the United States remains what's left of a constitutional republic, and that's what has to be protected and maintained at all costs. I'm very hopeful that we're going to see a renewal of American democracy and of the American republic in the wake of the ravages of Donald Trump. But we must survive him first, and that means keeping intact the republic as we know it.
Well, adding to your list of the irreversible, of course, is the judiciary. And Donald Trump is making the most appalling appointees to the federal bench, totally unqualified ideologues and ignoramuses. I mean, it's shocking. Now, mercifully, a couple of the more dreadful ones have been rejected, but the idea that you can actually see on television a candidate for a federal judgeship who's never conducted a trial and knows nothing about the law, is that's the height of contempt, it would seem.
Well, I know that, but I would even say there that there is some hope, because the judiciary, again, as we know, is not immune to the political climate of the moment. These are know-nothings and reactionaries now, and many of them will make it to the bench, not all of them, but many of them will. And they will survive, of course, in public service, as it were, beyond the Trump era. But their judgments, their verdicts, their thinking, their politics, and there is a politics in that branch of the government, as we well know, will certainly be affected by the climate of the company. And the country is going to change, I think, for the better. And they're not going to be there forever. The judiciary is a large and varied body. He's not going to be able to take it over. He is going to be able to influence it. And they will harry and diminish justice for a generation, perhaps for decades. But again, it's not irremedial. And I think they will be influenced by the changes that I see coming in the wake of the Trump era, as will the Republican Party, as will institutions in general. I think we're going to come out of this much better, Ian, than we went in. But we, of course, have to survive in the meantime.
Well, curiously enough, the change and the optimism that you're expressing, Roger Morris, and it's definitely manifest, the change in this country seems to be being led by women.
Oh, I think that's certainly true. You know, that's in a sense, and that's always been true. I remember being in the White House and looking out at those massive demonstrations against the war in Vietnam, and reflecting on the fact that much of that was being led at the grassroots by young women. It wasn't just the furtive young men trying to escape the draft, and I knew many of those, but women have always been a motive force, often the motive force in American reform, and not just in terms of getting the vote, but certainly in terms of civil rights and all the rest. And they are leading the charge. And what's happened with the utter revolution in exposing and calling out and punishing, really, with the kind of retribution that's long deserved, punishing sexual abuse and harassment and all the rest, is part of that revolution. We're seeing an unfinished revolution in terms of women's rights, in terms of feminism in America, in terms of human rights, just as we're about to see an unfinished revolution in American politics. We're going to get hold of campaign spending and of campaign reform in general. We're going to get hold of the abuse of concentrated power and the kind of oligarchic control that's been exercised for so long. Donald Trump has made that possible because he has so starkly represented and portrayed and inflicted all of the worst elements of that old order. And the old order is dying. It's dying in both parties. It would not have died in the same way or at the same pace under a Hillary Clinton presidency. And I know that many of my liberal friends would be appalled at the notion that Donald Trump was better for us in the long run than Hillary Clinton, but there is a case for that to be made. And I think historians will look back at this period in a way which I think will be much more hopeful and much more redemptive than we're seeing it now. Of course, we're living through the worst and the most painful elements, and among the worst, of course, is the sheer uncertainty of what's going to happen in foreign affairs.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, in terms of the best of times and the worst of times. In this retrospective, we've talked about Russia. The other, I think, significant thing that happened this year was the reemergence of neo-Nazism, not just in the United States but around the world, but in particular in Charlottesville. Do you think, when you talk about the old order being vanquished, talk about atavism, bringing back Adolf Hitler is grotesque?
Well, I think that's true. But again, this has been an undercurrent, a dark dark side of the moon in American politics for a very long time. The difference here is that Donald Trump has given it license, given it a kind of respectability, a platform, given it, of course, the kind of notice in the media that it never really enjoyed before. The Nazis had gone out of vogue. You remember it's Skokie, Illinois, and all of that, the furor that arose in the 1950s and 60s, and they had disappeared just as the Klan had disappeared. But that undercurrent of racism is still the unhealed scar in American life and society and culture, and it will be there for a very long time. There will be a core of Trumpian voters, whether Donald Trump is around or not, and they will feel a sense of loss. There will be an element of racism as well as economic grievance in what they represent and in what they feel. We're not going to be without challenges and without difficulties ahead. But Donald Trump really has brought the worst of this to the fore, and I think given us the opportunity to deal with it and to overcome it, to transform both political parties, which was the essential ingredient, the essential prerequisite to any kind of meaningful reform in American life. This has not been done just by the Republicans alone, as we well know. It could not have happened without the Democrats, without the collusion and complicity of the Democratic Party, without its surrender and compromise in 100 different ways. And Donald Trump has afforded the opportunity to change that in the ranks of the old democracy, as well as in the political system at large. So I don't mean to be naive about this, Ian, but honest to God, I feel a more sense of optimism amid the gloom here, despite the blight that we're living through and witnessing in American politics. I think this ordeal it offers the opportunity and the hope and the real enlivenment of change in American life.
Well, Roger Morris, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Roger Morris, who served on the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Councils under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning with Anthony Lake over the invasion of Cambodia. He's the author of Between the Graves, America, Afghanistan, and the Politics of Intervention. And his latest book is about the history of the inner politics of the U.S. and the USSR, Kindred Rivals, America, Russia, and Their Failed Ideals. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back speaking with the director of a new film that takes on the issues of immigration and race relations roiling America and Europe in the fade.